Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Kavita Hafoye. As Israelis and some of U.S.'s allies celebrated the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem Al-Quds, meant to symbolize Jerusalem as Israel's capital in their eyes, there were Palestinians that were being killed by the regime forces. This all on the eve of Nakba, or the day of the catastrophe. In this debate, we'll look at the controversy surrounding Trump's decision, the Israeli occupation, and how the international community's lack of action, along with some regional countries, have emboldened Israel's occupation in the Palestinian territories. We're going to cross over first to the Gaza Strip and talk to Press TV's Halal Safadi, who joins us. Halal Safadi, just in the past half hour or so, the Palestinian Health Ministry came out and said that the hospital in Gaza is in desperate need of medicine, and aside from that, they can only tend to the ones who are in real need and in desperate need of being tended to in terms of their injuries, which means that many are not going to be tended to. Can you tell us more about that and the day's events on top of that?
Well, so far, this has been definitely the bloodiest day since the beginning of the Great Return rallies. And this has caused the hospitals in the Gaza Strip to run on emergency state for too long. Basically, in the press conference held at the Shifa Hospital, which is the main hospital in the Gaza Strip, the Ministry of Health has announced that they have been running on an emergency state since the beginning of the day because of the high flow of patients coming into the hospitals. According to the ministry, only today 55 people were killed, 2,771 others were injured. Among those injured, 67 are in a very critical state. So basically, the scenes at the Shifa hospitals are terrifying. Patients are in the hallways and the corridors of the hospitals. Painkillers are not available at the hospitals anymore. Patients are relying mostly on ibuprofen before going into surgeries. So basically, the Ministry of Health has not only stated that they are short on medical supplies and items, they have also called on Egypt to open the borders to allow patients to get the treatment outside of Gaza due to their very critical state and to the lack of medical supplies and items at Al-Shifa Hospital and hospitals along the Gaza Strip.
Very well. Thank you for that. We appreciate it, Halal Safadi. Let's bring in Michael Lane from the American Institute for Foreign Policy, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Michael Lane, welcome. Great day for Israel today is what we understand. And, of course, on top of that, you heard what our correspondent there said about the injured in the hospital in Gaza by the name Al-Shifa. Ibuprofen, I believe, is what's being used.
That's You're another. Very welcome. Can you guys just confirm regarding tomorrow?
Sorry about that. So, Michael Lane, I was tuning into the...
Hello? Hello?
Okay, if we can cut the audio so I can continue. Thank you. Sorry about that, Michael Lane. Let's look at the reaction first coming from the White House and what has happened, because this just came. Gaza's rulers, Hamas, are to blame for the deaths of 52 Palestinians that were killed by Israeli forces during the protests over the U.S. Embassy opening in Jerusalem, putting it squarely on Hamas. Do you agree with that statement coming from the White House in reaction to what has happened?
Well, as we know, this is not a new protest. This has been going on for about 6 weeks. It was all organized leading up to today and this week as the big week. There have been deaths and injuries in the 6 weeks preceding as we come up to this. I think that given the number of protesters that showed out today, which I've heard estimates of 40,000, but I'll defer to any other estimates which are more accurate than mine, it's not surprising that the number of injuries and deaths that we've seen is approximately where it is. I think what the White House meant was that the Israelis had announced in advance that they would be defending with lethal force their borders, and anyone who threatened the barrier fence or threatened any IDF forces were going to be subject to the use of lethal force. That's apparently what has happened. So I think the White House feels fairly comfortable in saying that it had not been for Hamas inspiring 40,000 people to come out and protest on this day, the results would not have been what they were.
Did you check out some of the online activity on this, Michael Lane? I'm just curious about how people are responding to what has happened. You know, descriptions run from massacre, bloodbath, some supporting Israel, some saying that it's Hamas's fault. But one of the things that I'd like to find out from you if you've seen, actually, is a side-by-side picture of Ivanka and Jared Kushner when they're, I guess they're, maybe it's the opening ceremony of that U.S. embassy, side-by-side with the dead protester that was being carried. Don't you find that to be somewhat shocking in terms of it happening in the vicinity of that U.S. embassy opening there in Jerusalem, Al-Quds?
Well, okay, first, no, I have not seen that particular picture side by side, but I have a good view in my mind what you're talking about. And the contrast is stark, yes. But there are two different events that are going on, connected, of course, by causality. One is in Jerusalem, Israel is celebrating the opening of the U.S. Embassy today on the 70th anniversary of the creation of the State of Israel. And then a short 90 minutes away, you have the protests going on the border of Israel and Gaza, which have resulted in this really tragic loss of life and the awful nature of which is going on down there. But there are two events connected only by the fact that the protesters are saying that they are driven to protest as a result of the embassy opening. That's no cause, I don't think, for Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump not to attend the opening ceremony. It's a big day for the United States moving its embassy and a big day for its ally, the people of Israel.
Well, it's a big day for them, but it's all connected. I mean, by some accounts, maybe not in your eyes as much, but these are all connected because of the fact that we're looking at what is happening to Palestinians as a whole and then what's happening to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Let's take a look at some of the comments coming through on this. I'm going to start with Palestinian Prime Minister Rami Hamdullah. Trump's recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital in December and the relocation of the embassy, these are blatant violations of international law. Are they violations of international law?
I don't think so, no. I mean, the United States has the ability and the authority to place its embassy in any part of the country with the concurrence of the host country. It's United States law ever since 1995 that our embassy will be moved to Israel effective 1999, and it was only a series of successive steps by successive presidents every 6 months that delayed the implementation of that U.S. law. President Trump decided he was not going to delay it, and so it was required by U.S. law for our embassy to be moved.
Okay, Jason Greenblatt is another statement I'd like to get your reaction on. He has said, taking the long overdue step of moving our embassy is not a departure from our strong commitment to facilitate a lasting peace deal. Rather, it is a necessary condition for it. Do you feel like it's a necessary condition for it and agree with him?
No, I disagree with Ambassador Greenblatt. You know, I mean, look, here's the thing. We know that the Palestinians are going to react negatively to the moving of the embassy and today's opening of the embassy. There's no doubt about that. It is something that they, you know, would hope would be included as part of the negotiations towards a peace treaty. But the peace treaty, as we found out, you know, over years and years and years, is not really going anyplace. There's no progress. There's no real effort being made. There's no discussions on the table now as we speak, because after a year of effort by Jared Kushner and his team, the Palestinian Authority isn't even talking to the United States or receiving our emissaries at this particular time. So I think President Trump decided that he was not going to follow the failed policies or the failed vision of the last 30 years, and instead he was going to pursue a new course. And the new course was to accept, in President Trump's eyes, the obvious that Jerusalem was the capital of Israel. We were going to relocate our embassy to that location. But President Trump was very careful to say that we were not precluding or prejudging any of the other discussions negotiating the peace talks among the parties, including the final status of East Jerusalem. So it's not a necessary precondition, but it's not a precluding of a peace agreement either.
Well, the reason why I asked in that order your reaction to these statements in particular is because when you have the decision made by Trump, when he made it, knowing what it's going to do and what it did as a consequence was for the Palestinian Authority to say, we don't want the U.S. any longer as a mediator. Doesn't that kill any chances of a peace agreement? On the one hand, you have that happening, and on the other, by what has happened as a consequence, I mean, you need two sides to make an agreement. If you kill one side by one of your actions, then who are you gonna talk to?
Well, I hear your point very clearly, and it's not without substance. However, President Trump today, Jared Kushner today, and the United States today, as well as Prime Minister Netanyahu, all stressed during the ceremony that they were committed to the peace process and they were willing to move forward. Now, if the Palestinian Authority is not willing to move forward, then yes, that does create a giant impediment to the peace process. We'll see what happens over the coming months. I noted just before airtime, I picked up word out of Beirut that Hezbollah leader, Mr. Nezbollah, excuse me, has said that Trump's, Nasrallah, that Trump's peace deal of the century is going to be available within the next couple weeks. And he leaked a few of what the anticipated details were. That's news I had not picked up previously from other sources that it was to be out in the immediate future. And there were many rumors, all unconfirmed, as to what the details were going to be. But I would urge the Palestinian Authority, if indeed Mr. Nasrallah's information is correct, to take a really, really close look at what this peace deal is and see if it's something they can live with. And if it's something they can't live with, they need to be talking to the parties involved to modify it to be something that they can live with. Either that or start the process all over again. And I think, you know, we're looking at a 10-year process if that happens.
Well, I'm really somewhat surprised that you do actually use or tune into Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. I'm not going to ask you what your thoughts are on him, but did you catch the other part that he said that, hey, don't sign this peace deal? Because it seems like, based on leaks, and I'm sure you're aware of the leaks of what the so-called peace agreement might be all about, is that it's going to trample, or I should say, for the Palestinians, they're not going to get the rights that they deserve. We can go into some of those details. Is this a strategy then, in a sense of what we see today, the violence that's being exercised, that Palestinians, you got to come, because if you don't and sign off on this, this is what's going to happen to you? Because that's what we've seen in the past 6 weeks, if not in the past decades.
Well, I don't know if the Trump deal of the century is going to be a take it or leave it deal. I think there will still be a lot of details to be worked out. But look, let's take a look at the worst case scenario and the best case scenario, all of which are rumors that I've heard in the last 24 hours. The worst case deal is the one that I heard from Hezbollah today, or just moments before airtime, which was that the Palestinians would be limited to the Gaza Strip, and that would be their new homeland territory. On the other hand, I heard one yesterday morning that indicated that significant neighborhoods in East Jerusalem were to be reserved for the Palestinians, and that they would have unfettered access through land touching it on the West Bank that would provide them access, direct access, without going through Israel. So who's to say which of the leaks or the rumors are true?
That's true. Let me get your reaction then on what a statement was made by the young prince, which we haven't heard in the news recently, the young MBS. He said to, in front of, I think there were some representatives from AIPAC, if not the meeting itself, that Palestinians should shut up or make peace. That offended a lot of Palestinians. What is the role of Saudi Arabia when it comes to the so-called peace process?
Well, you know, I think Saudi Arabia and the United States have become very close friends and are becoming closer friends with the emergence of the Crown Prince as a real power in the kingdom, and certainly with President Trump assuming office here in the United States. I think there's a strong personal bond there. I think there's a strong alliance going on between the two countries, even stronger than had been so in the past. And the discussions between the two countries have apparently convinced the Crown Prince that the impediments to peace are more as a result of Palestinian recalcitrance than they are from Israeli recalcitrance. And I think that is underscored in the experience that Saudi Arabia has had In recent years, relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia and cooperation between the two countries in terms of sharing intelligence and things like that have really warmed dramatically. And I think that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has positioned itself where it would like to see the Palestinian problem resolved. It would like to see the Palestinian people taken care of, but it does think that they've been unreasonable over the years in their approach to the circumstances.
Two of the core issues that, as it stood, or as it stands, if we were to know for sure what the peace agreement is the right of return, and of course the status of Jerusalem al-Quds, which at this point we see what is happening with that. But one of the things that is often not talked about is the stance that Israel has when it comes to the security, that Israel would remain responsible for the borders. These all sound like things that are not conducive to having a peace agreement. I mean, even if we were to get right down to it, is there any chance for the Palestinians to talk to the Israelis and whoever else are the mediators about these issues, which seem to be non-negotiables at this point?
Well, of course, they've had, you know, in excess of 30, 40 years to talk, and they had the last year to talk extensively with Jared Kushner and his team. Presumably, some of their concerns are incorporated into whatever deal the Trump administration is going to propose, and presumably they're going to have to make some compromises, as many of Israel's concerns will be incorporated into the deal, and as Israel is going to have to make some compromises to make the whole thing work. Exactly where the nuances of the details are, I really think that we're going to have to wait until we see the plan before we can comment definitively on who's having what imposed, et cetera. But remember, there are some things. Let's just take, you mentioned the right of return is one of those things that it was rumored today will not be included in the plan as released by the Trump administration. Well, the right of return has a very interesting history, but most recently it was only about 5 years ago when Mr. Abbas said that he personally viewed the right of return as merely, not an individual right, but merely a return to the 67 borders. Well, if you're going to get close to that, and then all parties are going to accept modification of the 67 borders in return for land swaps, reparations, and things like that, if you can come to an agreement, then okay. But it remains to be seen if that agreement can be reached.
Mahmoud Abbas said tonight, again, is something that he has repeated, that he believes that the U.S. is no longer an impartial mediator and needs to be out of that equation. Is that even possible? And at the same breath, he said, we need an international mediation to happen here. Is that a possibility?
I guess in the long run, perhaps it is. It depends on how stiff and how much resolve the Palestinians have regarding not participating in any peace talks, including the United States. Again, let me say, I said it just 5 minutes ago. When the Trump proposal comes out, I think everyone needs to take a look at it and see how close it is to something that's acceptable. If it's not acceptable, you see if it can be modified to make it acceptable. But if the United States participation in it is so awful to the Palestinians that they can't even accept a good deal, then over time, there may be an evolution to the point where there are some other impartial parties that may help facilitate a peace deal. But that goes back to square one, which means we are years and years and years away from a peace deal, whereas if the Trump proposal is close, perhaps we are within grasp of a peace deal.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much, Michael Lane. That brings us to an end for this edition of The Debate. That was Michael Lane from the American Institute for Foreign Policy. Thanks also to Hala Al-Safadi, our correspondent, who spoke to us at the top of the hour from the Gaza Strip. From Mikko Itali, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.